Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, hour number two on this Football Friday. What is going on? What's happening? Tiki and Tierney here, coming from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Hopefully everybody's doing well, getting ready to blast into the weekend. Some good football games, both on Saturday. And, of course, week eight in the NFL, which started last night. Great conversation on Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. Go give it a vote. I put up a poll. Describes itself there. Just go when it's on my account, though. I think we retweeted it on Tiki and Tierney. But if not, at Brandon Tierney, go give it a shot there. Got Jason Wright, the president of the Washington football team. He will join us this hour. Nick Saban basically saying, you don't really need defense to win big anymore in college football, huh? I'm not saying he's wrong, but it's an interesting admission. We'll get to that coming up next segment. Right now, we get to what appears to be the inevitable house cleaning of the New England Patriots, Teak. They are, you know, my team is completely bereft of talent. But I really think that if Adam Gase was coaching the Patriots, I don't know that they'd win a game.
Injuries now.
How many games would they win?
Harry is hurt.
He's always hurt.
And Edelman's out.
Out.
I can't decide whether or not this team is buyers or sellers.
Oh, they got to be sellers. Go ahead.
And that's what they're saying. That's what they're saying. Because look,
you buy players to win to get a wild card?
So no. Yes.
No. Okay.
Yes, because look, there is a consistency in winning that this New England Patriots team has. I mean, it's all they're about. And by whatever means necessary, sometimes it's skirting the rules. we'll leave it at that. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine a team coached by Bill Belichick laying down the sword. And it's because we're only six weeks in. We're in week seven now. Or actually, it's week eight now. Teams played seven games. Some teams have had bye weeks, but that doesn't matter. We're almost halfway through the season now. And I can't imagine a Bill Belichick team not that far out of, you know, competing for a wild card or competing even for the division, given, you know, where the Bills, depending on what the Bills do going forward, I can't imagine them laying down. So, yes, logically, it makes sense for them to say, all right, it's time to just get rid of any of our, you know, payable assets and, you know, start over, do a little bit of a rebuild. Cam Newton can't do X, Y, and Z. And we know that the trade deadline, which historically wasn't a big deal in the NFL, has increasingly become a huge deal.
Which is fun. I love it.
I think it's fantastic. You know, GMs have gotten younger. Yeah. They've gotten more aggressive. You got capologists now. I remember when we first heard that word, capologist.
Mike Tannenbaum was the first capologist.
Yeah, I remember what in the hell is a capologist, right?
Crunching numbers.
You're just making up a position for somebody? Like, seriously, what are you talking about? Uh-huh. But it actually has become one of the huge parts of the NFL and how they do business. And the reason that I say I don't think the Patriots are, well, the reason I believe that they could be buyers and not sellers is because they have so much cap room right now. I think they're seventh or eighth in cap space available, like 21 or almost $22 million mm-hmm. they have available. And being halfway through the season, not egregiously out of it. You know, I mean, it's not like they've won one game.
No, they've won two.
Yeah, but it's not like they've looked bad all season long. They've looked bad in the last couple of games. But, mm-hmm. you know, if they had, I don't know, an A.J. Green or whoever the trade asset could be, mm-hmm. could they be a little bit more available towards success this season? And I think the answer is yes. And so I debate with myself whether or not I see the Patriots selling. The answer I have internally is no, they're never going to be sellers. They're never going to be, you know, that team that cashes it in, because I can't see Bill Belichick going up to a mic and saying, yeah, we gave it our best shot, but you know, we're on to, you know, we're thinking about 2021.
On to Cincinnati.
Yeah,
well, we're on to 2021.
We're on to 2021. I just can't see that.
He's not going to say that. Of course not. But here's the thing. You're asking yourself the wrong question.
Go ahead.
You're wrestling with whether or not they should be buyers or sellers. The real question is whether or not they should sell or stand pat. Mm-hmm. Like, buying is not even in the conversation.
But there's, yeah, I hear you. Go ahead.
Their point differential is horrendous. And the timing is good here because they're playing the Bills this weekend. So mm-hmm. any design, first of all, to win the division, not only do you have to jump past the Bills, but you're not. You're going to get smashed this weekend.
Yeah.
But you'd also have to
jump. But what happens if they don't? If they don't, then that changes the conversation, right?
It would change the conversation on how I view the Bills, not about what I think the Patriots could do this year. Patriots aren't doing a damn thing this year, but they're doing nothing this year. Their season is over. So when they lose to the Bills this weekend, they'll be 2-5. And they're lucky. The timing is somewhat serendipitous because when's the trade deadline?
It's Tuesday.
Yeah. Tuesday. So when they're
election day, why would they do that? I don't understand that.
I never even looked at that. That's true. Wow, it is election day. Oh my god, think we have a big week coming up, pal?
Yeah, I know.
It'd be crazy.
Football? Who cares about football?
That's going to be nuts. Oh wow, but they're going to be 2-5, and they are going to be faced with their own mortality for the first time in a long time. And what bad organizations do, I don't mean outwardly, what they put out there for public consumption, what they will think of internally, mm-hmm. and more importantly, what they will do, is they will say, all right, you know what? We're going nowhere. Rather than, to your point, maybe bringing a player or two like quick, like try to get this done fast and piece it together and maybe compromise the cap next year, let's just fight and play with purpose and play with pride, which we demand here, and probably take our lumps because we have a deficit in talent, and then just attack 2021 the right way with a clear mind and cap space and a boatload of draft picks. There's three teams in the division below them. They're going to be playoff teams. I know there's an extra playoff spot.
Yeah.
But you got three teams in the AFC North who are going playoff dancing.
Yeah.
That's three right there.
Yeah.
The Bills are going to make it. The Chiefs are going to make it. That's five right there. I mean, the Titans are going to be, that's six. I mean, come on. They're just now.
Yeah. So they're on that outside edge with.
They're not even the Raiders, dude.
Indy.
No, they're worse than Indianapolis.
Indy and the Raiders and the Chargers.
The Raiders are better.
Yeah.
They're better.
Unless they find a way to get better. And they bring in whoever. Say A.J. Green gets traded. Because we always talk about A.J. Green kind of just being the odd man out, even though he's still the man there. Mm-hmm. It's just because they have so much talent and younger.
I don't know if he's still the man there, honestly. Boyd's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Boyd's good.
Boyd is good. Auden Tate is good as well. So yep. T. Higgins, they just drafted in the first round. John Ross has been on the trade block. We know that. Again, but we know he's been on it. He's not part of the conversation. But they have so much talent there. Uh-huh. It's almost like, man, if A.J. Green could go help the New England Patriots, would that be – I mean, what could you get for him? You know, so we know the Pats have a ton of picks. So the question, you're right, a lot will be determined this weekend. If the Patriots play a tight game and either win or lose, it makes you think differently. But especially if they
win,
it without any of this talent, don't you think that there's just an inkling of, man, we can go for this?
If they win this game, all right, without Edelman and without N'Keal Harry and the way Cam Newton looked the other day.
Horrible.
If they beat the Bills, you know how I have a band talking about my team, unless mm-hmm. it's like topical. We're not talking about the Bills for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
If the Bills lose this game, Bills fans, I will not mention, I will not reference, God forbid, unless somebody goes down or something happens that is incredibly noteworthy and we have to address it. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing our job. If you lose to the Pats, which you won't, you're going to win by double figures. Don't waste your time on the Bills, because then the Bills simply aren't good enough. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't want to hear it at that point.
But you're
supposed to wipe the floor with the Pats.
But
20 years of getting your head handed to you.
But isn't that history a big deal? Like the fact, like,
be a big deal to the Bills to bludgeon them when they're finally vulnerable. I am going, wait, Is that a little blood trickling down your side, Mr. Drago? Yes, it is. Time to knock out the Russian. Now you put them on their back.
Yeah.
Now you just, the 20 years of pent up, you know, I know that's a different roster. I get that. But and I'm making this more theatrical. I know that they don't process it this way. But 20 years. 20. I know Miami's won a few games down south against the Pats. The Bills, for the most part, have been owned by the Pats, like my team's been owned by the Pats.
Mm-hmm.
Just destroy them. Win 31-10. Don't even let them get across midfield more than twice. Like, the Patriots stink.
They do right now.
Stink.
And a lot of it's because of the talent. But stink. If they could go get some talent, would that make them more interesting?
No, it wouldn't.
I mean, it would. No. The question was, would it make them more viable?
No.
They're not relevant right now.
It wouldn't.
Right? They're not relevant. I mean, they are relevant because of the Patriots, and you never know. You're not going to get a Patriots team that's ever going to lay down. So they're relevant in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start talking about the postseason or potentially getting to the postseason, because we're almost at the halfway point, they're not part of the conversation right now because there's nothing you look at and say, well, they're going to get better doing this, stopping the run or making big plays or converting on third downs or whatever it may be. You don't see any of that.
Yeah.
And so it feels like they're sellers at this point. But I just can't help but think that the New England Patriots aren't a team that's going to lay down and look towards the future. They just haven't done it in so long. But
season's over.
I mean, it's not. I mean, technically, it's not. They're only three games out of first place.
Yeah.
Two games out of the wild card right now.
I'm only a couple of zeros away from being a billionaire. I mean, come on, man. You can always be sorry. Your own. You can always make it sad. They're just miles away. The Steelers would thump them. The Titans would shove it down their throat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Ravens would just make a mockery of them with their foot speed. They run all over them. The Browns, I think, would beat them. The Chiefs would it would be the JV versus the varsity. I mean, listen, I'm not trying to be cute here. Like, right now, the Patriots are closer to, well, nobody's close to my team, but they're closer to the Jaguars and the Texans than they are the upper structure of the AFC.
Mm-hmm.
They're so much closer to the bottom than they are to the top.
Yeah, there's no doubt about
what
that.
What do they do well?
Especially after the 49ers game, where they did nothing well.
I'm asking you, like, what do they do well?
Right now, nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing.
And how is that going to change Sunday?
They're not playing special teams well because it's Bill Belichick. And so you have this blind belief. Man. You have to.
I don't.
Have a blind belief until the evidence tells you otherwise. And if they
eyes are telling me all
they,
I need to
if
know.
If they lay an egg like they did against the 49ers, against the Bills, then it's easy to start thinking about, hey, this thing isn't working out.
What I think is the more interesting conversation, not that that wasn't fun, because it's always, you know, unless the Patriots, when you're that good for 20 years, you deserve, top of the hour segment when everybody's hurt and you're going nowhere. What I think is almost more interesting, though, and we'll be able to do this as we get a little deeper and closer to the draft, like, and get a sense of where they will draft, which will be top 10, I think. Like, what do they do for the quarterback?
Yeah.
I mean, can they jump up and try to get Justin Fields? I don't know. I mean, I really am curious. Like, this is the first offseason.
Yeah.
Now, this offseason, obviously, but now that they actually see the tangible staleness on the field and erosion, this is the first offseason that the Patriots will have to look in the mirror and say, man, we suck.
Yeah.
Like, we are not good, and we need to be creative and innovative, and we need to bring an infusion of talent here. Coaching them up only goes so far.
Yeah.
Being disciplined, I mean, you got to bring in some horses. They got nobody.
Think about how long it's been since the New England Patriots had to think about drafting a quarterback.
20 years.
Less than that,
because they had Bledsoe before that.
That's right. That's right. He led them to the Super Bowl the year before they won the Super Bowl. So they have had 20-plus years without having to think about we need that one piece that every team has been searching for. At least every 5 or 6 years. Some teams you get 10.
Except the Packers.
Yep, except the Packers and the Giants with Eli and Big Ben. Probably the Seahawks will be this way because they're not going to have to look for Russell. But you think about a lot of teams, it's like every – at least once a decade, sometimes shorter than that, you're looking for that guy. The Pats haven't had to do it for 25 years. Which is crazy.
It's an amazing testament.
And now they have to think about who's going to be our quarterback, who's going to be the leader of our team, and then more importantly, how are we getting that guy? I think that's the harder question, because if they follow the route that I'm talking about, BT, like not laying it down and not, you know, getting some young talent, some work on Sunday afternoons, as what we call tanking. You know what I mean? Without doing that, they could put themselves in a position to be drafting nowhere near where they need talent, right? So they're in the middle of the pack drafting number 10 or 11 or 12 or whatever it may be. You're not getting one of these good quarterbacks this year.
No.
And so where are you getting your quarterback? And it now becomes a two-year project, which is something that's not fun to go through. And if you're Bill Belichick and you're, what is he, 68, whatever, 67?
What about Jameis Winston?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I mean, there's always those type of solutions. But they had a chance to get Jameis Winston this offseason, and they didn't. Same thing with Marcus Mariota.
Yeah. Sean Payton, a year with Drew Brees, a little more maturity. Maybe he's more likely to be a Patriot.
He's only 26. I mean, it's crazy as you think of it. You know, you feel like he's washed up and done. He's 26 years old, Jameis Winston.
I haven't given up on Jameis, you know that.
No, neither have I. Neither of you. Neither have I. He just needs to stop throwing interceptions, and then he might be a good quarterback.
I'll tell you what I'll give up on. All right, this would drive me. I'd have to think, knowing what I've, and you know, because you've heard it for 8 years, what I've gone through as a fan for this team that I root for football for my entire life, there is one silver bullet. There's one more bullet in the chamber that would wipe out every ounce of hope and ability to remain a fan, not of the team, of the sport. If this ever happened, I really don't think I could ever watch football again. You ready?
Go ahead.
The Jets trade Sam Darnold to the Pats. I know they would never do that. I know they wouldn't because of the Pats. And Sam Darnold becomes what I think he could be.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I mean, let's be real. If they did do that, he probably would become what he should be.
That would be the death nail. I would check out. Your partner would not be mentally the same ever again.
You're like, I'm not talking football anymore. We're doing a show for only for 5 months out of the year. We're not talking football.
Exactly. The most important thing for our show, we can't do anymore. Sorry, CBS. Sorry, Entercom. All right, T, coming up, Nick Saban. Nick Saban said some pretty interesting things. I don't know if I fully agree with him. I'm not sure if my partner does either, but they certainly make you reflect on the state of the game in college right now. We'll get to that coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line here on Tiki and Tierney's 1-855-212-4227, 855-212-4CBS, sponsored by GEICO. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to GEICO. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to GEICO and save. Really looking forward to the next segment. Jason Wright, the president of the Washington football team, who we had on probably 5 weeks or so, right when he was brought in, actually, right around then, I think, give or take a couple of days, really just projects an incredible amount of positivity, direction, intelligence. That was a hire that team needed, man.
Yeah.
We love him, and he's going to join us coming up next segment. But, Teek, let's get into this here. I'm going to read it, and you, obviously, as the former player, you react first, all right? I'm not going to tell, well, I teased before, it's Nick Saban, quote, "It used to be that good defense beats good offense. Good defense doesn't beat good offense anymore. Georgia has as good an offense as we do an offense. Georgia has as good a defense as we do an offense, and we scored 41 on them. That's not the way it used to be. It used to be if you had a good defense, other people weren't going to score. You were always going to be in the game. I'm telling you, it ain't that way anymore." End quote.
And
Nick Saban's been around a long time. What do you think?
No, he's absolutely right, BT. It's almost gotten to the point where you better have the ability. You don't have to play this way because you can play other ways offensively, but you better have the ability offensively to outscore your opponent. Otherwise, you know, it can just be futile, you know, trying to win football games, especially in, you know, some of these wide open conferences like the SEC has become with Lane Kiffin and even Mike Leach, Mississippi State. He's trying to be that way. You know, he doesn't quite have the talent yet. But Alabama, you know, is that way. LSU used to be, you know, let's run the ball 35 times a game, and now look at them. They're throwing the rock all over the field. At least last year they did. With Joe Burrow. And so that's football these days, and it's almost impossible to defend. And what he's talking about, you know, in just in a micro level, BT, is It's so easy to get a mismatch in college football because you motion a guy, you when a team's not, defense isn't substituted, now all of a sudden he's covered by a linebacker, you throw a less than a yard bubble screen, and there's a mismatch on the perimeter, and all of a sudden you're picking up 15 yards. If he breaks a tackle, maybe he goes to the house. Like, it's very hard to match that defensively with scheme. It isn't about defense as much anymore as it used to be. It is so much now more about offenses and, you know, do you have the ability to be explosive when you need to be?
Okay, if that's the case, and I believe that you're right, I would agree with that. Why would you waste the energies on the recruiting trail toward defense the way you did 10, 12, 15, 20 years ago?
That's a good
point. Wouldn't that have to change too?
Well, it's interesting.
Should it?
Well, yeah. And so what you've seen is you've seen one, well, defensive linemen are always going to be the same. Like, you need great, big-bodied, athletic defensive linemen. So that part of the defense, is that recruiting side is never going to change. Now, it's gotten a little bit different, right? The defensive players are not, you know, these hulking 320-pound D linemen anymore. They're more athletes. Maybe they play tight end in high school, and you put on 30 pounds and when they get in college, and so they're this athletic 285-pound D tackle or something.
Yep.
And he's just impossible to block. Like, maybe that's changed, but so the front four are still thought of the same. But the second level, BT, we're going to start seeing a lot of more Isaiah Simmons type players. North Carolina has one, and their hybrid backer, safety. His name is Chaz Surratt. He was runner up to Defensive Player of the Year in the ACC last year. Same exact kind of player as Isaiah Simmons, but you need that player now, and so the recruitment of defense is shifting because you're looking for a different player. Like, you're not looking for, you know, a shutdown corner per se. You're not listening, you know, if you find one, great. You're not looking for, you know, a hulking 240-pound linebacker anymore. If you find one, great. But what you're really looking for is that versatile player who can catch.
Who can run.
Who can hit. And most importantly, he can run because he can do so many different things in coverage in college, which is what you have to be able to do now.
So do you think it's more about the concepts that have been introduced at the college level that validates Saban's words? Or
it's the motion, BT. It's simple as the motion, the pre-snap motion. Well, it's like, well, you watch college football. It's like crazy trying to keep up with, like, what position is this guy even playing?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like they're all over the field.
Okay.
And so as a result, you end up having the default to these zone coverages, which are, you know, they're impossible to, you know, stop people in, especially if you have a good run team. You know what I mean? So if you have to default because all this motion to, all right, everybody, we're going to play cover four. Everybody just back up, and cover your zone. Turn around and hand it off to a good running back. He's got nothing but space.
10 yards, 15
exactly.
yards.
Exactly. Without even trying.
Yeah.
You know what
but
I mean?
You still have to score once you get inside the tight red zone.
And so that's what matters. So that's why, you know, you need these big, you know, athletic defensive linemen and these versatile, you know, second and third level players so that they can, one, be stout, but also be fast enough to keep up with the misdirection that happens down the goal line as well.
See, I find that interesting because we talk about, just to weave the NFL into this for a moment, we talk about, you know, the explosion of offenses in the NFL. And we generally point to, I know there's a few factors, but the one factor we tend to illuminate the most is, well, you just can't, you can't hit, you can't play defense the way you used to based on the rules and the interpretation of the rules, the enforcement of the rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what you're saying now in college is more about the spacing and schematics. So at the collegiate level, it's about schematics more, but the propensity of offense at the highest level is more about the rule book?
Yeah, definitely. Because in the NFL, you after 5 yards, you can't touch a guy. You get an automatic first down, right? With illegal contact.
I can't stand that rule.
I can't either. And sometimes I'll see this flag thrown, and the contact happened at 6.5, 7 yards.
Oh,
sure. I'm like, really?
And inconsequential to the play.
Yes. I'm like, really? You're calling that on the other side? The quarterback didn't even look to that side.
That's what I'm saying.
And you're calling that a penalty and giving them an automatic first down. It's almost impossible to play defense against some of these offenses. And you're starting to – those same principles that I was just talking about, BT, you're starting to see them in the NFL, right, with all the motion and the, you know, the jet sweeps and the fake jet sweeps and the zone reads. It's Like, how do you defend that?
You're starting to see it a lot on Sundays.
That's right.
You're starting to see it. You watch the red zone, as you do.
Yep.
You're starting to see it, you know, here and there. It's happening.
Because that's where the big plays come from.
I know what I mean?
You see these touchdowns because, you know, the cameraman gets confused sometimes.
That's right. That happens a lot. Do you think that this has provided us with a more enjoyable product or no? Can I answer my own question for a second?
Yeah.
I actually think so, because I think that the mindset of the Fante – if you took the average fan and is skewing younger, I don't mean the old timers, which appreciate a defensive battle. I get that. And there's elements that I enjoy, although I want to see offense more than defense.
Yeah,
but
too.
Sometimes the good defensive game is appealing somewhat. But I just think that people are conditioned. They want fast. They want things happening. They want it free flowing. They want style points.
Yeah.
And I think that, as I answer my own question, I think that it's more appealing to the fans today with more points rather than a 13-10 game.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah, that's why college football is so exciting to watch, because you don't know what's going to happen. And scores happen quick, man, in college football. So I think it is more appealing, to be honest with you. There's something about watching a well-done defensive struggle, but most of those – what get identified as defensive struggles is more inept offense. You know what I mean? It's not like a defensive struggle.
Yeah.
It's just offenses that suck and don't know how to execute. And that's not fun to watch.
That's not fun.
No.
I would almost, because you're not going to change the rule book. One thing that I would consider changing here is, and I've never really liked this, you know, first downs in college, you get the stoppage.
Yeah.
I would, if you want to keep scores, you know, away from the 50s and the 60s with frequency, maybe you just keep it going.
Yeah, keep
Don't
it running
stop
clock.
It at all.
Yeah, I'm surprised that hasn't changed in college football yet.
Scores come down a little.
You're right.
I don't know, maybe a little closely, more closely resemble something that we watched 15, 20 years ago instead of futuristic. I mean, every time, you got these top teams scoring 60, 70 points, it feels like, against middling teams for sure. But the offense, again, I like the offense, but sometimes it does feel too much. All right, T, coming up here, I'm going to talk about Washington, and they've got a very interesting first of all, they've got a terrific head coach, and Ron Rivera is so easy to root for. They've got Jason Wright now, who is their president for the Washington football team. We had him on the show a while back. Engaging guy, gives you answers, doesn't give you the recycled nonsense, you know. You ask him a question, he gives you an answer. So I love talking to him. And Jason Wright joins us next to talk about Washington and their direction and what they're trying to do. We'll do it after Erica Herskowitz's update, which is coming at you right now. Here's Hersky. All right, Sunday, the NFL on CBS features a matchup. Two elite teams fighting for divisional supremacy. When the Steelers bring their ironclad defense to Baltimore, they battle Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Maybe the Ravens make a move for a wide receiver before the November 3rd deadline. We'll see. Plus, a key AFC showdown between the Bills and the Pats. JB and the guys get you set up for all the day's action. The NFL today starts at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. Sunday, the NFL is on CBS. All right, good stuff so far. Really strong conversations. Hopefully you guys are enjoying it. Next hour is going to be on fire as well. We'll get to the Bears and the Saints there. One of the games we'll focus in on. Rough week. First rough week for Sharp Tierney, but I've got good word. He's ready to come back and roll it up nicely this week. But, Teague, this is a treat because we had him on when he was brought in, when he was hired. It was great. He's great on social media. He's honest. He's candid. He's refreshing. And he's really, quite frankly, just what the Washington football team needed, to be honest with you. He is the president of the aforementioned team. Jason Wright back on the show. Jason, how you doing, man? What's going on?
Gentlemen, it's good to be back on. Happy to be here.
Yeah, nice. No, it's glad to have you back, Jason. And there's a couple things to run by you off the top that I found really interesting. First of all, I didn't know you were a Liverpool fan like I am, the English Premier League.
yes, sir.
But that's pertinent because when I heard your description of what the name ultimately is going to be of this Washington franchise, you were referencing English Premier League and how Liverpool has a colloquial nickname called the Reds, but nobody uses it. It's always Liverpool Football Club, you know, LFC. And you think Washington might be that because it represents the town, like the city, the surrounding areas, the Washington football team, while that might not stick and be, you said clunky, I think you're right, but it might just be Washington as opposed to why do we need a nickname?
Yeah, I think that's a viable option, and I think no matter what the name ends up being, it needs to represent. Mm-hmm. And if there's anything that ties this franchise to its history and the things that we want to preserve going forward, it's the fact that it's Washington, D.C. area's team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Doug Williams was throwing those touchdowns for the Washington, D.C. area team.
Yeah.
Joe Theismann was playing for the Washington, D.C. area team, you know, and going back further and further. And so I do think it needs to represent the area, and it's going to help us no matter what the name ends up being, craft our charitable portfolio, the way we engage with the public, all of that in a way that is very D.C. So that's sort of what I was trying to explain. And then that does mean that Washington is a viable option for the name. But yeah. I promise you I'm not stacking the debt.
but let me ask you this, though, Jason, because to come up with the name, right? Yeah. Boy.
It's just daunting. I can't even think about it.
Daunting is an understatement. You can't have everybody weigh in because you'll never move on from, you'll just be in the room all night. At what point is there that line of delineation? And I don't mean to sound callous, but it's like, okay, these are the people who are deciding the name. Like, I don't know how you incorporate what the people want, what the fans across the country want for this team, and what the people in the room who are running the ship want. How do you strike that balance?
Yeah, I think for me, it's a little hard to describe, but I think the bar is when I and our leadership team feel comfortable that we really understand our fans in a deep way. You know, for example, like we know what the fans want, some of the names that they want in sort of the what sense, this name or that name or this name. But we need to actually do the research to understand why. So, you know, for example, one of the popular names folks throw out is Red Wolves, and there's a howl associated with that. And they've got some cool ideas about conservation and doing that as a charitable thing. Like, do we actually have an environmentally thoughtful fan base? Is that part of what's underneath this? Do we feel like we need something to unify the stadium that's an easier, simple chant because we want to feel bonded to one another in a simple way? Like, if we get underneath why they want these names, then irrespective of which direction we go, we can make sure we design the fan experience in a way that meets people where their hearts are at. And that's actually what's important. And at risk of, you know, saying something a little bit bad, I don't think we know our fans as well as we could. And it's important for us to use this as an opportunity to get to know them that way. And it'll inform a lot of different things.
That's smart. That is smart, Jason.
Yeah. How are you guys going about doing that? Is it town halls? Is it, you know, how are you going about finding out?
You can't congregate. How do you do it?
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
It's tough.
Yeah. I mean, we're gonna have to make it happen over Zoom and Microsoft Teams and like everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
But I think there's three things we'll do. There's the nerd approach, and we will do outside-in analytic analysis of the market. And that's not just of our existing fans. That's of the past fans that have ebbed and fallen away from the franchise and the demographics we want to attract to bring into the Washington football family in the future. And there are analytic techniques that we'll use to do that. So there's a nerd vein. Then there's the vein we're talking about here, which is, you know, the upfront and close contact approach, close contact in COVID. But this is, you know, virtually having these focus groups. And I would love for it to be, you know, a set of fans alongside alumni talking to our team about why these aspects of name and identity are important to them. And then I think there's a final aspect that's about engaging community leaders. So this is, you know, leaders in the D.C. area, you know, the legislative leaders, the folks leading nonprofits and community organizations, the activists in the area, Native American and tribal leaders. They have equity in this decision as well. So there are a set of folks that we will talk to that are leaders. I think we'll pull all of that together and with that deep understanding, make a call.
Good luck, buddy.
I know, right? I know everybody's not going to be happy, so I've already resigned myself to that.
Yeah, smart.
But the best thing I can do is just keep it 100 with people about how we're approaching it and why we landed where we landed, and then try to make it as dope a rollout as possible.
That's all you could do, man.
Bring everybody on board.
It's a great attitude. Jason Wright, president, Washington football team, who, by the way, Teak, I mean, they're going to win a divisional title this year or what here? What's going on, Jay? You going to steal something?
I mean, we'll take it. Yeah, I think if I, you know, I'm not on the football side, but you know, it's hard as a former player to not be excited about the position we're in. And I know Coach Rivera thinks this too. If you think about our team, you want a young team to know that they need to grow. Mm-hmm. And our record would suggest we have room to grow. And so the team gets that message. But also for a young team to know they need to improve but be playing meaningful games, that's an ideal situation to establish the kind of culture that a coach wants to put in place. So I'm very excited for the guys on the football side, and it makes it a ton of fun to watch right now too, especially as we're moving the ball better and better.
Yeah, no, you can be a fan. It's pretty fun. You know, obviously you have the job, but you can also be a fan now because you know what's happening on that side of the the business. Now, you said you were on the business side, not the football side. And it's interesting though, because you mentioned connecting with the fans, and you know that churn that every business worries about, and how how do you bring that back is always relevant. And I wonder, because Dwayne Haskins, when he was drafted, I think people in the area, because he's local, he's a local kid, it felt good. It felt right. He struggled. Ron Rivera made the decision to pull him. You've also drafted well from, you know, Chase Young at the beginning of the draft. As you think about the football side, even though this isn't your, you know, under your purview per se, but the football side, the personalities, how are you starting to make that connection? Because it matters. Like, the players matter when you're trying to rehabilitate, let's use as a word, the brand of the Washington football team.
That's a great question. So I think about it in a couple of different ways. The first thing is, I, as a former player, like to take this lens. You know, there are folks that played, and no shot to anybody out there, but maybe you played JV football in high school and you played running back.
Yep.
There are folks when I was playing would want to tell me about how to read the hole. And I would say, you know what? I've had a few more years at this. I think I've developed a bit more expertise. Thank you for your input. Moving on. I feel the same way about the football side, coaching decisions, roster decisions, things like that. Yes, I played in the league for 7 years. Yeah, I played college football, all that. But these coaches, scouts, and others have been spending decades studying the craft in a different way, breaking down hours upon hours of films in another way that I haven't. And they have a level of expertise that I salute. Therefore, my role is whatever decisions they're making, whatever strategy they're setting, is to come in line and promote that in the best way I can, whether that's bringing clarity in the media, whether that is pumping up the players that we do put on the field through our marketing and social media operations. And then when I flip to the player side and I think about their aims, especially their aims off the field, and that could be philanthropic stuff around social justice or healthcare, things like that, it's my job to use our assets of the franchise to magnify their pursuits. And then I've got a personal side to it as well. And, you know, Tiki, you can relate to this. It's like, I want to help these guys really make the NFL a come up for them.
Yeah.
Because it's not a lifelong career. Very few people make lifelong money playing it. So I want this to be a come up for them. So as they have personal pursuits, especially in the off season, I'm here for that too.
Yeah, no, it's raising the floor. That's how I always describe it. You raise your floor once you've stepped into the National Football League, and what you do from that new plateau is really up to you. But let me ask you a question about the Snyders, Mr. and Mrs. Snyder. This analogy was given to me once from a former Washington player who came to the New York Giants, and he said the difference in Washington than it was in New York is that when I'm walking through the building in New York, I feel like I'm, even though I'm not talking to the owner, I feel like I'm talking to the owner, right? Whether it's his grandkid or his son or whoever it may be, it just felt familiar. As the Snyders are rebuilding this franchise, obviously bringing you in, bringing Ron Rivera in, what's the state of the rebuild? Like, how has it been for you all, this culture change that was necessary, like utterly and absolutely necessary? What's the state of it right now, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'll try to pull back the curtain as much as I can on this. I'll start by saying Dan and Tanya would want you to call them Dan and Tanya. They wouldn't want to be called Mr. and Mrs. Snyder. They'd want to be called Dan and Tanya. I think one thing that's important about this culture change, and I know it was a sticking point for both Coach and myself, is that we wanted to come into this role and be treated as the senior executive. And anybody who's honest about reading the franchise outside in thought, is that really what you're going to get? Mm-hmm. It has been 100% what we've gotten. Coach has had 100% autonomy to make the calls he wants to make around the team. I've had 100% autonomy to make the calls I need to make on the business side. And I have not always agreed with Dan and Tanya on all of the business issues that have faced us. But at the end of the day, they've said, Jason, we hired you for this. We're going to roll with you. Think about these two things, counterpoints that we brought up, but roll with it. We put our trust in you. I've had no hindrance to the things that I want to do. And so that's an important starting point and a foundation for the culture change. Beyond that, we've done a few things. Pretty soon we'll be announcing our chief people officer. But prior to that person showing up to really establish a people strategy and great human resources, we've actually started to put in place all the blocking and tackling. All the minute and mundane stuff that mm-hmm. is not worth listing out, but I'll give an example. You know, we went from what was a bit of a paltry parental leave to league-leading parental leave. And we just made changes upon changes like that to make it a workforce and a workplace that is an environment where everybody's excited to be in, especially for our women colleagues, where some of these things are especially important, and we heard from them early on. And, you know, Frank, I'm talking to everybody in the organization by the end of the year, so I'm going to hear more and more, and we'll make more and more of those changes.
It's Jason Wright, who's the president of the Washington football team with us here on Tiki and Tierney. The engagement, you know, I love how you tweet. I love how real you keep it. You keep it loose and funny. It's not like you keep your tweets the way you keep a conversation with us. It's just a normal conversation. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you know, no false pretense like, oh, I'm the president. Let me type it in a way that makes me look like I'm a president. No, you just type what's on your mind and you're smart and you trust your instincts. But I'm wondering, can you quantify the increase in engagement since you came in and since Julie, you know, we know Julie Donaldson pretty well, her doing her thing. Like, I feel like the social media for the team has been on fire and it's been so well received. Can you actually quantify that?
Well, one of the things that we're doing as part of the culture change is we are bringing in fresh talent. And that can be disruptive to an organization or it can be galvanizing. I think what you're seeing is that it's galvanizing. You know, on social media, we've got Marcus Stevenson, who leads our content creation, mm-hmm. our content studio. And we just brought in a guy, Ray Alinti, from he was at the XFL, was at the Jets, and is a great creative talent, along with a team that was already there. And we've just given them leeway. The same way that I talked about me and Coach having autonomy, I said to them, hey, do your thing.
Nice.
Do your thing. Push the boundaries here. Be very creative, you know, be in line with the zeitgeist and the way that people communicate on social media. And let's show that we are evolving into a modern franchise by the way we speak. And I think you see them nailing it right now. And I think it'll get better and better. And they've got some great ideas in the hopper about various other types of content that they can produce as well. So we're really just letting people loose and letting that bottoms up innovation come to the fore. Will we make mistakes? Yes.
Sure.
Will we make missteps? Yes. But we'll hand slap and we'll learn and we'll continue to push the boundaries.
Love it. Love it.
It's amazing.
Good, Teague.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, we're hitting voting. I know voting is a big part of this. We're out of time, but we'll tweet this out for you, Jason. You know, DM votes. I know it's such an important thing to do. The election is just right around the corner. We encourage everyone to go out and make their voice heard, just like you're making yours heard with the Washington football team. Jason, it's always a pleasure, man. Appreciate you.
It really is.
Always great to be with you.
Awesome. Thank you. And by the way, Washington is a team, 100% registered to vote. They got that out. He's what a hire for him. Third hour coming up.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.